Don't treat me this way. Dale Hawkins, who's my special guest. Dale, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Matt.
And I want to go back to your beginnings now. Is it true? I was reading a bio on you. It said that you were born in Gold Mine, Louisiana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a gold mine.
What a town. Now, was there a gold mine in the town? I guess that's a dumb question, huh?
Yeah, it was a plantation. Big plantation.
So it was called Gold. The plantation originally was just like the Gold Mine Plantation?
That was the name of the 5,000 acres. Gold mine plantation. We were sharecroppers.
Uh-huh.
We had so many acres that we. I'm speaking about my grandfather, my family, and I was. That's where I was born, and I was born on the plantation. I was going through some papers the other day, and I found a receipt where my grandfather paid the doctor $12. Paid him $2 a month. For 6 months, for him to come out and deliver me.
Oh man, $12, huh?
Uh huh. And let me tell you, this is like 1936. Okay.
Yeah.
$2 a month, Papa paid him. That is a treasure of mine. It was like, you know.
Yeah.
What can you say? That's to me, that is a gold mine, you know.
Absolutely. Now, I mentioned this on the air before you came on the air, that a lot of people try to lump you in with rockabilly, but I always think of you as rhythm and blues.
Man, I have to say, I'm with you. I ride it 100%. I think that there was just a few people that I would really consider to be what I would call rockabilly artists.
Mm-hmm. Like a Carl Perkins type artist.
Right, yeah. Right. And I'm not in there. I'm more into blues, blues, country, and a little pop, but mostly with a blues feel. Because I mean, most of the stuff that I laid down had that type of feel to it.
Do you think that because you were a white guy on an R&B label, that Checker was Checker and Chess were kind of they were putting you sort of to fill that spot on the roster, like, well, we have a rockabilly artist too, you know, that. Do you think it was that kind of a thing?
No, that wasn't it. I think it was the sound that they heard in me. Whenever Susie Q came out, Matt, bam, the first week, second week going, it was number 7. In the R&B charts.
Yeah.
Okay. What that says is that, okay, what have we got? We've got a blues, you know, it's here, but yet we're starting to get some airplay over here from other stations in the FM range, I mean, in the AM range, of it, and it's starting to move here.
Mm-hmm.
So, the way they had to break it was because of it being a blues label and having to go into the pop let's just say the stations that would play a white artist material.
Right.
And it was confusing, but it made it through. It was the same way with My Babe. And A House of Cards and a Wedding Ring. It was two-sided. It was a double-sided hit, so I got split play.
I'm glad you mentioned My Babe, because your version of My Babe is absolutely killer.
Thank you, man.
There's so many great versions of My Babe out there, but, man, yours is different. It's just...
I'll tell you a story about that whenever we want to talk about it. I don't mean to be talking about other things.
No, that's fine. We'll do that a little later. But
okay, but sure.
When we go back to your influences here, I mean, here you are growing up in a plantation town, knee-deep in the blues down there in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
Gospel
and blues. What were you? You listening to the radio at an early age? You playing records at an early age? What? What do you remember back to the real? I mean, your first memories of music.
So my first memories of music, event would be whenever Saturday nights would come, and we would get to listen to some of the Grand Ole Opry.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is like prior 5-6 years, okay? Mm. And my grandfather got elected as a marshal of Richland Parish, which is in Louisiana. You have parishes instead of counties. Mm. And so we got to move into town. And by him being marshal, I would get to go with him into some of the saloons. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd just walk in, and, you know. And at that time, you had in the front you had the white part for the white, you know. Then there's the door, and the other side was for the black, and rhythm and blues music on that side.
So in the same saloon, the saloon was actually split into two parts.
In some towns. In some towns, yes. But now in Mangum, it wasn't that. It was just a swinging door, mm-hmm. a big swinging door, and then it saw that was side was for the black customer. And on the side over here, you hear Hank Williams doing Lovesick Blues, oh, no, you know. And over there, you hear young old James say, "I'm going to dust my broom."
So,
do you understand?
I absolutely understand. Now, what if I want to listen to Elmore James sing and Dust My Broom? Can I go over to the other side, or would I get kicked out?
You wouldn't get kicked out. There wasn't any problems like that. You could, as long as you just kind of hung out on the side. I mean, me being a kid, I didn't have any problem at all. But it really wasn't that bad, because I could sit there and just, you know, listen till I, you know.
Yeah.
Until I couldn't.
Yeah. Wow. So
go ahead. The other big, it must be some, I don't know, telemarketer, bang. what I was trying to say was the gospel end of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you want me to get into this part of
Well, sure, absolutely. Okay. It's part of your upbringing. It's part of your influences.
What people don't understand is that the South, most all the churches, with the exception of Episcopal or Catholic, because they had their regular, you know, the way they did things every Sunday, all sang the same hymns. They just sang them in their cultural field.
Okay.
The same sound. Okay. Swing low, sweet chariot. Okay. And then you would hear it done maybe in the choir. What I'm saying is, the gospel music had a lot to do with everything, man. You had your Pentecostal Baptist, and then Professor Lyles, who was the principal of the black school there, also was a minister. He was a preacher. So I was selling grit newspapers then, all right? And I got to be his friend. And I could go up there and on Sundays, man, and sit in the back, and I could dig, you know, I could dig that music. And their feeling, and their feeling of expressing the feel.
Yeah.
Are you with me?
I'm totally with you.
Okay. And so it wasn't something that with an intention of. It was something that just happened.
Yeah.
If it's real, it's going. It's you know you can't
stop
hide it.
You can't stop it.
You can't. No.
No.
No, sir.
If it's in you, it's got to come out. That's what it's all.
That's
about.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so there's where I said, boogie chilling. It's you're 100% right. But anyway, that gave you a little idea in my love for bluegrass music. Mm-hmm. Bill Monroe, Left Flat and Scruggs, loved them.
Sure.
You know, right at that time there, Roy Acuff. It was a good time.
Yeah.
It was a good time. As somebody said the other day, you know, said, Dale, you know, you was born on a good day. You know,
yeah.
And counting what we've been talking about, I have to say that's about right.
Yeah. and you took all those influences and you put them together in your own music.
It's all I could do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't be somebody you're not and lag.
Exactly.
You know.
So when did you put your first group together?
Mm. Excuse me. Let's see. I got back from Korea. It was in...
Oh, there's something I didn't know. All right, you went to Korea?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But wait a minute now. If you went to Korea, you must have been way too young. Did you lie about your age?
Is the Pope Catholic?
So you wanted... Now, hold on. I don't want to get too personal with you here, but uh-huh. This leads me to believe that you wanted to get out of where you were. That's why you went.
That's it, man, my friend. You hit the nail on the head.
I know you too well, Dale. I know you too well. So things weren't... things must not have been going great because you wanted to get go in the Army or whatever service you went into and get out of town.
That's it. They say, well, why did you want to do that? I said, man, whatever I had, it had to be better.
Okay.
You understand?
Well, but...
It got me out, it got me away, it got me a place to lay down.
Yep.
You
got to see the world? Got to see the world a little bit?
Got to see as much of it as they'd let me.
but you went to Korea. That must have,
I mean, I was in Korea. How'd that work out
for you?
From 53 to 55.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm back. It's if you're up in, I guess the web page, I don't wear my cap from Korea with our troops, some of their symbols on the cap, mm-hmm. Whenever I go to perform. And I think that, let's hang in and support our troops, or just, you know, I don't want to say much more about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. You know? So you came back in 1955.
Right.
And music's on your mind, I'm sure.
Back to your question, okay. I was really searching for something that I wanted to do music, but I also wanted to go to college. You know, you want to do too much.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was I ended up playing music in one of the bars down there with a guy named Sonny Jones. And I started putting my first group together would be like early 56. Early 56 was whenever I started, going into a club or something to play.
What was the first instrument you started playing?
I started playing, believe it or not, my first instrument was a mandolin.
Mandolin?
Mm-hmm. See, all of them. The Hawkinses, on the Hawkins side, my dad, I got a cousin, Ronnie Hawkins. Hey, do you know Ronnie? Do I need to say anything else? Huh?
We know Ronnie well.
Okay. I went up at we have a place called Hawkins Holler, Arkansas, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
And you was asking me, and I just about went in this direction to explain something to you while I go. But on Friday nights, up in the Ozarks here in Arkansas, is where all the Hawkins were from, and the entertainment that we had there was there would be a schoolhouse, of course. Mm-hmm. And on Friday nights, everybody that played, that could pick something, met at this little school, and we sit around and pick. And they had a big wash tub, right? They'd fill it up with ashes. And there wasn't anybody there, hardly, that didn't, chew tobacco or dip snuff. But they could play, man.
Sure.
I mean, it was some good music.
Like
and it was in more, a tradition. But anyway, that was the instrument that I had to play because that was the only one with the group.
That was the one that was needed for the group.
For the group.
So Ronnie was playing with the group, too.
Ronnie didn't play. Ronnie lived in Fayetteville, which is about 35 miles up the road from Hawkins Holler. But
did he not come to this family gathering?
He was at we've had two family reunions the past 3 years. He was at the first one. He's up in Canada. I talked to him not too long ago.
Mm-hmm. How's he feeling last time we talked to him?
Well, he seems to be feeling pretty good, Matt.
That's good. I know he had some troubles with, I think it was cancer, right?
Yeah.
But he beat it, didn't he?
He said it was gone.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
but anyway, that that kind of hopefully in a
sure
a synopsis of or a little bit of the reason why that I have the feel for music I do is because it's got to be real.
Absolutely, you can't fake it.
You can't fake it, buddy. Mm-hmm.
Not when you're playing the music you're playing. You can't fake it.
Absolutely, and everybody, that's how. That's the only way I know how to do it, man.
Well, one of your songs, which really is soulful, and it happens to be the instrumental Cross Ties.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by this point, James, let me get the timeline correctly. James was only with you for the first session,
yeah.
Which was at the radio station Shreveport.
Now, right.
After that, did you stop recording at the radio station and start recording up in Chicago, you remain down in Louisiana?
No, I'll tell you what. I did two more sides there in Shreveport. Went to Chicago to do some stuff, and some of the stuff I don't want to get off on a tangent, but to really find a feeling hit. Mm-hmm. That I needed was La Do Da Da.
Yeah,
I had to go back to Shreveport, and because of the vocal harmonies and things. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we still had the same thing with the one mono machine.
Yeah.
Okay, laid the track down with the vocal, and as we went from to sing the background parts. We went from one mono machine across, and as it crossed over, we did the harmonies.
You bounced it to another machine.
That's right.
Okay.
Vocal backgrounds. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that that was the second biggest hit that I had.
Absolutely. So are you saying, let me just, again, get this straight.
Mm-hmm.
You had to go back to Louisiana because you needed to get back to basics with the song, you had to bring it back to what you knew, which was Susie Q.
That, right.
Right. Up in Chicago, you weren't getting the feel that you were getting down in Louisiana.
Well, I tell you what, I did, but let me tell you, what's so funny, and it's not funny, we cut some great stuff on the ACD. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
The Rock and Roll Tornado CD.
Right, yeah.
Yep.
They're the first... I don't know, there are about 9 or 10 sides on there, man, that I had never heard since I recorded them in Chicago.
Because they stayed in the vaults.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they're finding so many, I say so many, people say so many, like 10s and 12. They found 39 sides that I had recorded that I had never heard. Until
since the day
7-8 years ago,
or since the day you first laid them down, you forgot.
That's
about
right,
them.
Buddy. That's right.
Right.
And I tell you what, it was good to hear them. Well, you think you said something, where is it? I never get to hear it, and you get to hear it at.
Well, since you mentioned La Do Da Da, why don't we play that one now?
Oh, okay, yeah, that'll be fine, man.